Hey everyone, Mercedes here. I'm so excited to share with you the Lucky Few podcast will be headlining at Dear Mom Conference. Join us on November 3rd in Orem, Utah for our first official live event. Grab your tickets today at dearmomconference.com.
Hey friends, welcome to the Lucky Few podcast, where we are shifting the narrative by shouting the worth of people with Down syndrome. This is Heather,
Mercedes,
and Micah.
And today we are chatting with Terry Brown, affectionately known as Mrs. Brown by her students. She is passionate and gifted at teaching individuals with Down syndrome. She developed an innovative program called So Happy to Learn that teaches reading, writing, and math to children and adults with Down syndrome. She presents her So Happy to Learn method at workshops and conferences for parents and educators. We are so glad she's here, friends. So stick around and we'll talk ABCs, 1-2-3s, and why Mrs. Brown believes every child can succeed in the classroom. Woo-hoo! Welcome to the Lucky Few podcast. Today, we are going to be looking more at education with So Happy to Learn with Mrs. Terry Brown. And we have been visiting the theme of education. We just looked at inclusion for a couple of episodes. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to look at how tools we can use and ways in which we can help our kids learn, our kids with Down syndrome learn. Mm-hmm. And I first heard about Mrs. Terry Brown at the Dear Mom Conference.
Dear Mom.
Don't tell, but she was my favorite speaker. And I was one of the speakers. So that says a lot.
Because almost always you're your
favorite. Usually I'm my favorite. No, she's amazing. And what she's doing within the Down syndrome community and the way she believes in our kiddos and the tools that she's created basically to help our kiddos be the best that they can in terms of readers and writers and math in the educational place is incredible. So we're thrilled and honored that she's here. Mm-hmm. But before we talk to her and before we get into that nitty gritty, we're going to take a little time to hear from our sponsors.
Today, the Lucky Few podcast is sponsored by our good friends over at Love Every, where playtime is thoughtfully crafted by experts for your baby's developing brain. Stick around to find out about a special deal Love Every is offering later in the episode. And we're back. Hi, everyone. It's Mercedes here. And I'm so excited to be sitting down with a friend of mine, Mrs. Terry Brown. And I first heard about So Happy to Learn when we were going through the adoption process with Sunflower. And she was just a tiny little baby. And so many wonderful people were telling me about all the awesome programs in our area of Orange County, and I kept hearing about Mrs. Terry Brown, and everybody's like, you got to get into her program. And so I think I emailed Miss Brown and I said, I have a newborn and I need to get her into your group. and she lovingly was excited for me, but then also said that she sees ages 4 and up. So I had some time. I had some time. And then ever since then, I would just I was just following her on Facebook. And now Sunflower has been in her program for a year, and it's so magical. Every Wednesday, we walk through Mrs. Brown's gorgeous garden. Sunflower feels independent. She feels smart. She feels capable when she enters that house and when she leaves. And I've just learned so much from Mrs. Brown that I just rave about you everywhere I go. And super stoked for you to be speaking here on the podcast today. And hopefully encouraging other moms and dads out there with the amazing capabilities that our children have, the fact that they will write and read, and they are smart and capable students. I'm just so delighted that you're here with us today.
Welcome.
This is her. Terry Brown.
I am very happy to be here. Is this right?
This is right. Yeah.
I have never been on a podcast before, so this is new for me. I'm taking a field trip today to This is very fun, so I'm excited to share what I do and what I know with you guys and your audience, and hopefully they can walk away with some tips that will help them teach their learner.
Mm-hmm. So wonderful. And I just want to say that I didn't get to be a Dear Mom. This is Micah. And so this is my first introduction to you, Mrs. Brown, and just to get to learn from you right now. I have a 3-year-old who's, you know, gonna be here soon, learning to read and learning math. So I'm really excited to have you.
Yay.
So, Mrs. Brown, how did you get started?
Well, I'll try to keep the short version.
It's a big question.
I started about 20 years ago as an instructional assistant paraprofessional in the school district. I wanted a job where I could be at my kids' school so I could keep an eye on them and see what's going on and make a little extra money. I was a stay-home mom. And I got called to work into a special needs class. I got hired for special needs class, I think almost by default because nobody else, I was the only person that was interviewed for the job. And I think if there was others, I might not have gotten it since I had absolutely no experience in this field. I am a natural born teacher. I know that. I know I was born to teach, and I was playing school as a little girl and organizing everybody. And I had 4 younger brothers, so it gave me a chance to really do that. But anyway, long story short, I kind of went in and I call myself a recovering type A personality now. Back then I was full-born type A, so I have a job and I
go recovering yet.
Yeah. Yes. So I understand. But I kind of go in there like full force, like, okay, what books do I read? What seminars do I go to? How do I learn how to help you best teach these children, you know? And the teacher's like, okay, well, there's nothing really, just watch. I'm like, okay. So I watched it. Back then there was no support. I don't even know if there is now. Support for children with Down syndrome, it was all for the autistic community. So there was ABA therapists that would come in. So I would watch ABA therapists, like everything they did, and go, okay, how do I do this for my children with Down syndrome and that are in the class? And I also would follow speech therapists. I'd read every book. I would just do everything I like to do. So I was gung-ho in our class. We started off with I worked in a special day class, which is just kids with special needs. And then that class moved over to a kindergarten class that was 2 kindergarten classes with our 15 very, very high needs, special needs children. I mean, it was intense. And I was 20 years younger then, so I could really keep up with it. You know, I kept up with it very well. So I kind of consider all of that sort of my internship into learning. Yes. So when we were into the regular kindergarten class, there was 3 beautiful little children, just turned 5 with Down syndrome, Katie, Michael, and Mara. And 3 children with Down syndrome, everybody else had autism or, you know, learning disabilities or something going on with their 15. And I was talking to Mara's mom after school one day, and when she came to pick up, and I'm like, I wonder how, again, I'm like the type A, like, okay, it's my job to teach these children how to read. I'm not just their aide shuffling them around, you know, that's why I'm hired, to help teach them, right? So she said, well, I have this book that I'm just starting to read. It's called Teaching Reading to Children with Down Syndrome. Would you like to borrow it? And I said, I would love to borrow it. So she brought it to me the next day, and I devoured it. And I was like, my book is so worn out and so well-loved, and I still get chills 20 years later when I pick it up and read it. I mean, if I was to write a book, which I probably will one day, but the first 60 pages would be exactly what I would write. It's just gold. It's gold in what Patricia Owen has come up with. So I said, okay, so I'm going to do what it says in this book. So with Katie, Michael, and Mara, I started doing the suggestions that Pat Olin gave, like make it fun, make it exciting, make it easy, make it simple, show them, like have a picture of mom and match the picture mom to mom, have the word mom, put the word mom on there, mom. So I made up worksheets for my students in the class that they could go in their folder, because every week in that kindergarten class, the children had 45 minutes a day to work on their folder. So my job as an instructional assistant was to go around to all of them and pull out the worksheets that were just, what am I supposed to be doing here? What took me a little bit of time to figure it out. So how am I supposed to teach that to 15 children? How am I supposed to adapt that? Right. So what I did was then we just sort of took those busy worksheets out that everybody, all the other kindergartners were doing, and I adapted, according to Patricia Olwine's work, simple, easy to do worksheets. So I taught my learners how to do them, put them in their folder, backed off, walked off, you know, walked to the other side of the room and said, here, there's your work. Because now they had something that they could do and they could learn from and that was right at their level. Mm-hmm. Well, within 6 months, all three of them were reading. They were Amazing. They were happy learners. They were excited. They weren't running under the table to get away because they were given work that was meaningful for them and they were feeling successful. So, and the favorite part of this story is Michael, Katie, Mara still come to me twice a month on Saturdays. Awesome. They're 25 and it's just awesome. They've been coming all these years and I adore them. So then a couple of the moms, of course, said, can you work with my child after school? And I'm like, okay, I guess I can. So I started off with Katie, Michael, and Mara came to the house, and I was also working with children with learning disabilities. I think everybody in the class started coming see me after.
Yes.
And there's probably a rule now that paraprofessionals cannot work with children after school because it sort of rocked the boat a little bit. But back then, it was like I got away with it.
So new.
It was new, and it was good. So anyway, that's how I got started. And it's evolved over the years, like just through word of mouth. I started off with three learners and now I have 70. And I also have an online teaching group. And basically what I do is I create a curriculum that's based on that curriculum that I made years and years ago. Each month where the format is predictable for them. So they're going to be successful because it's a predictable format. And next month, I change it. I change the words, but the format's the same. It's easy, not a whole lot of words on there. It's not confusing, and that's... Oh, and then the other thing is I want all my students to work independently. Mm-hmm. And now with my four-year-olds coming, I have my four-year-olds working at the table independently, and it's a process of like, okay, sit down. Here's your work. I just showed you how to do it. I'm going to sit over here. You do it, then bring it back to me. And it's really wonderful because what I find in the special needs world, and I did it myself, was my job was to stand over and to adapt. So the children were never really getting a chance to work on their own. Yeah. And when it comes like time to homework, like you'll see when your child goes, you know, you're going to get homework that you have to sit down and do with them. Mm-hmm. Homework should be for everybody. Like, okay, I've showed you how to do this. You've been successful at it. This is great. Here you go. Now it's my job to sort of teach you how to sit at the table, enjoy yourself, and do your work. And then when you do it, I'm like, wow, that is so great you did it. And they want to do it. And it's a process to make that happen. But now when I have groups and they're doing they work together as groups at the table, working and learning. And when their parents come to pick them up, it's not like, oh, I'm out of here.
Right.
It's like, oh, we got to go now. Because learning should be fun. Mm-hmm. And it should be exciting.
Yes.
And you should have stuff in your folder that you can do, that not somebody's got to stand over you and show you how to do it, you know? So.
So, Terry, I have two questions. So, describe a time at Mrs. Brown's house. And tied into that, your teaching philosophy. Because I feel like to know you is to love you and to understand the whole process and the whole environment that you create for your learners.
Okay, so let's start with a four-year-old that comes. And actually, I have a two-year-old. I just started with a two-year-old. And, you know, I feel like I'm really guided by my inner voice guides me on everything I do. And I was just, Liliana is two. Mm-hmm. And she's been on my waiting list since she was born.
Yeah. Her mom did what I did. Yeah.
Yes, and she actually lived in the neighborhood, so she came over and I got to meet her as a baby and fell in love with her, and she's the first baby with Down syndrome I ever held, and I was like, oh. But then when she turned two, she's been doing her ICEC therapies and she's used to sitting. So I said, let's give it a try with Liliana. Let's give it a try and see. if you're game. And she said, yes, I had no idea what to expect because I've never worked with a two-year-old before. She's on her fourth session now. She's reading four words.
What?
She loves it. And she's interesting to work with because I now kind of see her as a four-year-old. Like when we walk out the door, I want her to walk out independently. I want her to shake my hand, and I kind of forget she's just two, because then she cries for her mom, and she's got that two-year-old cry,
right?
Which is really interesting. So we just have to make adaptations for that. But so I'm saying this to not even limit it at 4 years old. You know, start early. And Liliana loves it. She asks for it every night. And the reason you have to make learning fun, you have to make it doable. You have to ignore the things that bug you. Like I always tell moms, like I'll be working with a child doing reading and a mom will be looking at their daughter and their daughter's got their finger in her mouth. And she's like, get your finger out of your mouth,
right,
you know,
right.
Things like that. And you can't, when you're teaching, it's all about teaching. It's not like sit up straight. It's not like get your finger out of your mouth, because then the child, you just thrown them off. So when you're learning something new, maybe you will be chewing your finger or you will be twirling your hair or... So it's just about introducing them to the materials, to the word cards, and setting them up for success. So my program has definitely evolved over the years, but what I do now with a four-year-old, so like when Sunflower comes, right off the bat, I tell the parents, ask me questions, but I'm going to be bluntly honest with you about everything. Like, okay, just from my experience, like I can look at Sunflower and go, okay, in a year, I know this is what she's going to be doing. You know, this might take a little bit longer. She's going to excel at that. So I want my learners to walk up the walkway by themselves, not be attached to mom. And so that's a fun thing. So they walk up the walkway, knock on the door, nice. Say, hi, Miss Brown, and come in. And that's just been wonderful. And then when it's time to leave, after they do the same thing. We shake hands. I say goodbye. And I'm teaching them the skills of how to interact with people without having mom all over them. And again, I used to for years would, okay, mom, you just do what you do, you know, say goodbye to Ms. Brown and all that stuff. And then I realized one day I had one of my 16-year-olds who's been with me since she's four. The mom goes, say goodbye to Ms. Brown, say thank you to Ms. Brown. And I'm like, wow, I've been doing these kids a disservice. Since it's multifaceted, yes, what we do at my house,
right,
I feel it's my job to teach them, instill in them,
right,
hey, I can do it myself.
Right.
And it's a process.
Yes.
At first, I might just get a little shake. Mm-hmm. And then by the fourth thing, they're like looking at me. And it's funny, like if I'm talking to Mercedes Sunflower is ready to go, she's got her hand out, bye Brown.
Yeah.
Bye Brown.
Yeah.
And then I have to honor that because it's your time, you know, it's your time. So what I do is with a four-year-old, I'll start off with some simple to read books, some high interest books, a book about Sunflower. I have a beginning reading series that I've created, and that beginning reading series has taught hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of children to read. It's very simple. A center in Santa Ana asked me to create the books for their preschool program long, long, long time ago. And then I started using it with my students and I was like, oh, they really like this. So we do that. We do some happy sheets. We do some work. We call them happy sheets now because they're not like worksheets. We came up with that name, happy sheets. So to kind of teach them how to do that. Word cards, flashcards with high interest words.
And fast pace. I noticed too, when you're sitting down with Sunflower, and I like that. At first you're kind of like, oh, is that too fast?
Mm-hmm.
Are you kind of just, I don't know, it's just interesting to watch, but you really do that fast pace to keep interest, to keep things moving, upbeat, and that was something that really stuck out to me too.
Yeah, because if you're not, and everybody, that sticks out to everybody at first, like, whoa, she's going so fast. And the reason why is if I'm like, oh, hi, Sunny, let's get the book out. Here you go. How are you feeling today? You know, I'm kind of like MTV. Well, MTV doesn't really. It's like the original Fast TV, you know.
Yeah.
It's just like, or
right.
Sesame Street's even
right.
Fast. Like, okay, now we're going to do this. Now we're going to do that. So what's happening is they are tuned into me the entire time they're there. Mm. And I give little breaks. I give 3-minute breaks in between each activity where we play with the toy so they can clear their mind. Our focus spray, all that stuff. Okay. And then, but moving fast it keeps your attention better. Yeah.
And these are like 30-minute sessions?
about 30 minutes for the four-year-olds. And then when they get older, then everything sort of moves to the table where they work independently and they're learning everything from their happy sheets. So they're learning how to work independently at the table, and then they bring me their paper, and then I just target the things that they specifically need on the back of their sheet. So then all the whole program goes straight into that once they get a little bit older. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This question might be too soon to ask, but I'm asking it. Is there an age that it's too late, or is there a student that you thought, okay, this person is this age, and they're just now going to start to learn how to read or write or do math?
Never.
Yes, I love that.
Never, mm-hmm. ever.
It's never too late.
Never, ever, ever, ever. And you can start at such a light, easy way.
Heather has
Heather's
tears.
Pulling out her focus spray,
and she's getting recollected.
No, never. In fact, I had a girl come to me, one of my favorite students. She moved. She came to me when she was 10. She had a school experience. I brought my lady, my new friends here, some focus spray. So we're just like, we're regrouping with our focus spray. anyway, so Maya came to me. She'd been in school, typical school, till she was 10, school, and I could tell right off the bat she was a bright girl. Well, to me, everybody's bright, but I could tell, like, she's going to pick up fast. But she couldn't read. Her mom, I always ask the mom, do they read? Can she read? Can she write? What do they do? She said nothing. She doesn't.
I'm raising my hand. When you just interrupt right there, when you say she couldn't read, is that she didn't have any sight words or a certain number of sight words? She couldn't read a book? Like, what do you mean when you say she couldn't read?
School would say she's not a reader.
Okay.
Her mom did not know she could read one word.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I sat down with Maya, and then all of a sudden I could see, like, wow, using the methodology that I did. Well, long story short, in 3 months she was reading and just riding up a storm. Mm-hmm. And so that's another thing I want to say is for parents, I made a little note to put this down, is parents have to be so careful not to compare. Your child is a unique and individual learner. Mm-hmm. And I'm privy to where I sit to talk to hundreds and hundreds of moms personally and know what all their experience is. And I always tell moms, please do not compare, because I don't compare. I don't look at your child and go, whoa, why isn't my other student doing that? I just really look at everybody as a unique and capable learner. And I know I've never had anybody that hasn't been able to learn how to read, hasn't been able to learn how to write. One of my students, I had just about given up on his writing, but his mom, she drove far away. She brought him. He read. He was having positive experiences. And this is a funny story. I just keep plugging away. We keep working on it. We just make writing fun. I write him notes. I don't correct. I don't go, no, I don't hear erase that. That's wrong. Right, just expressive writing. Just do it. And one day he writes on the back of he'd been coming to me for 10 years. One day he writes on the back of a worksheet, "You fat, Miss Brown." And
oh, my goodness.
And luckily I'm not fat, or my feelings would have been better.
Yeah,
I would
no, have taken, not I would, fat
I would have taken
all.
That. I would have taken
very
that.
Slender.
I would, I would have taken that very personally. But the interesting aside is that morning I woke up and I felt very bloated and I felt fat, which is kind of,
funny.
These guys have vibes.
They have vibes.
Yes. They pick up that stuff. So I think that's why he wrote, "You're fat, Miss Brown."
He felt that you had a chubby vibe that day.
A bloated vibe.
A bloated vibe. There you go. Not chubby. Nobody's chubby.
So anyway, that was the breakthrough. Mm-hmm. And did I correct him and go, oh, that's not nice. Let's write something nice. Let's erase that. It was like, whoa, you wrote that. And then later that week, he wrote his mom a little note, and it said something like, it was not a nice note. That it was not nice. But she sent it to me, but she was like crying so happy because that was the first thing he's written. And this is what I'd like to encourage families is, like, we'll worry about toning it down, getting him to be a polite writer, but right now we need to really encourage that.
Sure.
And now he just writes the most beautiful, beautiful, beautiful things. Like, it's just exploded. So,
and he has Down syndrome. Like, I just want to reiterate that.
Yes, he has Down syndrome. Yeah. And if I was to say, I don't think he's going to ever write, I never say that because you just never
get proven. Yeah,
you just can't. Because especially now that I saw him do that, I was like, wow. So the point being is, don't compare your child to anybody else. Given the right circumstances and the opportunities to learn, your child will excel, mm-hmm. you know, at what they're good at. They'll become they'll become, like I said at the Dear Mom conference, and when I give consultations to parents, a lot of times parents will come to me and go, I have the IEP. Would you like to see the IEP? And right. I'm like, I used to look at it. Now I'm like, no, I really don't, because this is my goals for your child. Mm-hmm. And since most children come to me for the long haul, and if they don't, I'm teaching you how to teach your child, so you've got this for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. I want your child to learn how to read, enjoy reading. I want them to become expressive writers, not just copy, not be able to mm-hmm. copy perfect letters. I want them to be able to write you a note that says, Dear Mom, I love you. Mm-hmm. Or your fat mom, or,
you know.
You know what?
Anything beautifully honest from their heart and mind.
I just had a student, his very first writing was a picture of his mom. He taped it up to the window, and it said, you suck.
Oh, my God.
But at the bottom was a math equation, and he was trying to say, you suck at math.
Oh, you know, so, I love it.
So also, things aren't always as they appear.
Yeah.
But it's just funny, and we embrace that, and then that mom was just like, wow. And my child finally wrote.
And he knows me so well.
It's right? True. I do. I do suck at
you
math.
You keep me humble.
So really not comparing your child. And I don't allow it. Like I have a teaching online group, and everybody kind of knows, like, just don't even go there, because you're just, what is it? Comparison is a thief of joy. Yeah. Yes. And it's true. It's true.
Yeah. Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Do you feel like, Terry, that for you, as you've, this process for you of becoming an expert in helping children with Down syndrome learn, has part of that been learning about the brains of children with Down syndrome? Have you, like, I've just been reading a book about behavior and the stuff in it about the frontal lobe, and just that sort of thing has helped me kind of see the challenges my son has with behavior and why. Has that applied to you for teaching?
I guess about 10 years ago, 12, 13, 14, many years ago, I started getting excited about brain gym and kinesiology and doing exercises, learning about the brain and how it works and how you can do certain exercises that would help children learn better.
Mm-hmm.
And I am not like real technical of explaining it or explaining how the brains of children with Down syndrome work. I would, to answer your question, I would say no. I just sort of like look at each person as an individual. Mm-hmm. And I know we all have our challenges, you know, with our brains. And everybody should be doing things that strengthen their brains.
Sure.
So to answer your question, I do exercises and I do things like the focus brain. I do things that sort of light up that light up the part of the brain that learns.
Mm-hmm.
And can we segue into teaching, not testing,
exactly.
Since we're talking about the
brain?
That's
what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
awesome.
Definitely.
Okay. So to answer your question, I probably don't spend too much time looking specifically at the brain of a child with Down syndrome. I really like to look at all my students as just, you're just a person,
mm-hmm.
you know, without a diagnosis. But what I'll notice is, wow, you're a person without a diagnosis who's sharp. Yesterday mm-hmm. I was writing something and I couldn't spell the word, and I had a D on the end of it, and I had a teen behind me, and I'm like, I don't know what the word was. I'm like, how do you spell that? And then he spelled it out perfectly, you know, and he left off the letter. And I'm like, yes, David, that was great. So I just kind of look at like, wow, David's a little sharper than me right now. And
right.
I just kind of look at it that way. So if I see a deficit, like if I see if a child is having a hard time, words are having a hard time sticking, like they're not remembering mm-hmm. them. Some of my students remember words just like that. In 3 sessions, they've got all their words. Others, it takes a long time, and that's okay. It just means we just have to work on that part of the brain. Like, how do we make that stick? How do we make it more interesting so it sticks in the brain, mm-hmm. so it has importance? But then once they've got the word, they've got it forever, but it just might take a long time. So teaching versus testing, and what made me think about that when you said that is the way the human brain works. When you put somebody on the spot and you test them, they shut down. The brain... Mm-hmm. The part of your brain is, I'm not good at technical terms, but the reptilian part of the brain that puts you in fight or flight goes mm-hmm. into fight or flight when you ask a question. So let's say I'm working with your little boy. I'm introducing him to one of my books for the first time, and I put the book down, and I go, oh, look, and there's a picture of, let's say, a dog. And then I go, oh, what's that? Mm-hmm. Then he's all of a sudden in fight or flight, because he has to answer. And then you say, it's a dog. So that's how we all test our children. That's how we all teach our children. It's just that's how I was taught. That's how we're all taught. That's what we do. Oh, what color is that? Mm-hmm. What do you want for dinner? Or, you know, instead of making it easy for them. So you want to set the brain up for successful learning by, and this is Pat Olwine in her book, Teaching Reading to Children with Down Syndrome. It's the best. And it really shifted everything in my work when I got this. So if I'm working with your son, then I would say, okay, here's a book we're going to read. I'm going to read it to you first. Let's take a look. You know, mom, dad, child's name, dog, cat. Oh, wasn't that fun? Would you like a try now? And I'm never going to say, what's this? But when they're ready, they're going to say it. Mm-hmm. And when I finally got that down, and again, I see so many children. I see children with severe behavioral issues. I see children with mild behavioral issues. Once I got that down, no more timeout chair. I used to think I had a little timeout chair before. Everybody just behaved because they felt successful. Because they're used to being tested. What's this word? What's this word? Mm-hmm. What's this word? So, and it takes, I always tell parents not to feel bad, because it took me a whole year. Once I got it and saw it in action, it took me a whole year to not do it anymore. Mm-hmm. So if you don't walk away with anything else from this talk but that, just know that is huge. That's so great. And it works for everybody. It works for all your kids. It works. And it would be kind of like, I always, when I give a talk, I would say like, okay, you three are smart ladies. I want to hear 10 things that you've learned so far from me. Come on.
Yeah. Raise your hand.
So you're like, okay, I can probably do that. But do you feel like a little bit of
anxiety?
Yeah. You're on the spot. You're on the stage all of a sudden. You're like, what are my 10 things?
And that's how our children with Down syndrome feel. Right. Because they're being tested all the time. And they've most of what I learned is they learned how to adapt. Like my first three, how they adapt was, oh, she's coming with work. I'm going to run out the classroom and be cute. I'm going to kill everybody with my cuteness.
Because not behave.
Yes, because I don't want to feel like a failure.
Yeah. Yes.
And I'm just getting it over and over and over again. And So I'm glad I got that in.
Can you give an example? You did one with the reading for teaching, not testing. How do you do that with writing? Teaching, not testing.
Okay. So writing. So if I'm starting with a four-year-old, we're starting in that beginning, we've got a writing notebook, which is part of my program, and I'll say, first we're just going to scribble. We're just going to scribble. You scribble, I scribble. And then I'll say, oh, we're going to do go stop. We're just going to make a straight line. So I do that. Then I might say, let's do hand over hand. If if Sunny will let me, I'll do hand over hand. And then
if she says it, yes.
And that's important not to force it. Yeah. It's like, okay, do it on your own. And then I'm sort of just sitting back going, okay, now it's your turn. And I'm not like, now it's your turn. You get this right, because we're all watching you. And then maybe they start at the bottom and they just get all the go stops. And then I'm like, wow, you just did it. I don't correct. I don't go over it. I just say, that was great. And then I go, but Patricia Olwen talks about this. You want to do repetition, 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 repetition. Yeah. But each time you're doing it, you're like you're doing it for the first time. So now in my books, what I just started recently doing was I'll turn my books into a workbook, and they circle. It's a read and circle book. So Sunflower's homework is to take one of my books, work independently, and read and circle. Now, at first, she's just scribbling all over. And most moms, or me, the old type A me, would be like, that's not a good circle. Ah, here, let me help. Right. But it's part of the process. And now Sunflower makes the most beautiful little circles.
Yeah,
and
that's awesome.
She loves to make circles. And to read it.
That's and to read it.
Shows that
right.
She's so reading cool. The word.
So then I keep adding on to it. Now, for the older child who's already... Should I segue into my Mars story and keep it short?
Sure, I want you to. And then I have an example that I'd like you to address.
Okay. So Mara was I got to be with Mara for years and years at school. So I did what most instructional assistants did. I highlighted, have her trace. Oh, wait, you got to make your K this way. Oh, you got to stay in the lines. Oh, you got to have spaces, all that stuff. And then I said, it dawned on me one night, again, I just get these like inner hits. It was like, Mara can't write, dear mom, I love you. And I was like, so how do I teach her how to do that? So I thought on it, because there was no book out there on how to teach writing to children with Down syndrome yet.
Right, exactly.
it'll be coming out one day when I get some time. But anyway, so I remembered when my daughter was learning to write, when she was three, she would write I found a little piece of paper that said pig love. She'd made her P backwards. She made her G backwards. She had a little pig and a heart, and she gave it to me. And, of course, I'm like, yay. And I don't go, oh, Aubrey, I'm sorry. That's P is backwards. Here, let's go trace it 100 times, and then right. you've got it right. So kids with Down syndrome, I realized, had missed that scribble yes. stage. And they need to have that, because they kind of go from 3 to now we're in kindergarten where we want to be doing what everybody else is doing.
Exactly.
So long story short, I worked on this with Mara. I helped her to become an expressive writer. 9 months later, her mom calls me on the phone crying, and says, you're not going to believe this. Mara just left a note on my door that says, dear mom, I'm running away with Hillary Duff. I love you, Mara. And I'm like, bingo, it worked. And I knew that it would work. And it's worked for all of my students since then. But they have to go through. They have to do it wrong. They have to make their K's wrong. They have to make their S's backwards. Because that's how we learn to write, too.
And we have to allow them to. That's the thing I found repeatedly, is that our standards of perfection for our kiddos with Down syndrome are higher, in the hopes that we're helping them. But we're just like catapulting them to catch them up to all their peers, typical developing peers, rather than letting them take that time to process it. So like things like hand over hand, like instead of letting Sunflower scribble over a P or whatever, I could picture myself hand over hand doing P, thinking that I'm helping her muscle memory that way, you know? And I feel like there's so many times in different therapies, or just even in my own general like know-how, that I think I'm doing it right and being really helpful, but I'm almost being too helpful and not being realistic, to where, you know, she's still a young kid who needs to scribble, and it's gonna come together.
And it's okay to do like the one big P. Okay, here, let me show you how to do it, because that muscle memory gets in there. Then just have fun with it. Then just keep coming back with
and
that
repetition.
P. And repetition.
And letting her do it. I was going to say something. I remember we talked about this, where because we teaching versus testing, sometimes you'll get the question, well, how do I know my learner knows the answer?
Great. You'll always know, because, and don't forget your question.
Yeah. Sorry, Heather.
That's very good. Now, in my program, I know, because we've been reading this book for 6 months.
Right.
Okay, so your teacher came to visit at the house, which was great.
Amazing.
And I wanted her to see one of the books. So I pulled out one of Sunflower's books that she hadn't read in a long time and just put it there. Sunflower just whipped through it and read all the words.
That's
how I know.
Right.
Because I see when they do it.
Right.
Their words. I hold up their words and they read it. If they are not speaking too well yet, I put the words down and say, give me the word mom, give me the word dad.
I'm
so,
pointing to it. Or,
then she hands it.
Yeah.
So it's okay. Oh, so Pat Owen said, and I really love this, don't ask a question to your child unless you really need to know the answer. Like, do you have to go to the bathroom? Do you know what I mean? Or do you want fish for dinner? If you want to know the answer, ask them a question. And then don't ask a question unless you're 99% sure they know the answer, because... And then that really just knocks it out. There's no reason to even ask a question, because I find out. And I have a yes-no game where I teach my learners how to answer questions, because I was finding the majority of my learners were a certain age, and they had a hard time answering questions. So we start with just simple questions. What is your name? Oh, do you eat bugs? Yes or no? Are you a girl? Yes or no? So we have kind of get them in the habit of, I can answer questions, and we can just add more on to that. And then just work with a few questions like, what is your name? And then we can expand on that. But so that's the only time I ask questions. And then now when I need to know something, they just show me the answer.
Right.
Yeah.
That's so good. I have a child who has anxiety. And when we first went to get help, one of the things the therapist said to us was, most parents are asking too many questions. Mm-hmm. And as I'm still terrible at it, but as we started to change the way we talked to him, it changed how he responded in life and how he felt safer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing how much that plays into, for all kids, we are just question asking generation, or we say okay question mark at the end of everything we say to our kids. I love hearing that.
And sometimes we do it like out of nervousness. Mm-hmm. Like I try to tell my parents that come. I don't know how many times I've had a parent say to me, "Did you tell Miss Brown what you did this weekend?" Mm-hmm. And I'm like, "There's no way they can tell me what they did." So they sort of, yeah, again, they right. feel like. So it's much better to say, "Miss Brown, I want to share with you're modeling for your child yes. what it is you want them mm-hmm. to one day do. Miss Brown, we went to Disneyland. It was so much fun. Right. And what was your favorite ride, Sunflower? You know." What, and then you name two.
Right.
And putting it in.
We set them up for success.
Yeah. You make it so they can't fail. And right. I love that modeling. Like, oh, I'll tell you. And I love that bridge. Like, we can still be that bridge and they're still learning from that. Of like, you know, I'm sure Sunflower would want you to know that she right. went to Disneyland. It's not on her radar right there. So I'm right. going to share it. I'm going to model that. Hoping that
and knowing
will be
that you're setting
future.
The stage yeah. that she's going to do, and she will automatically do that. That's like right. me saying goodbye to the children with mom standing back, like okay, bye. I have to plant that seed and right. maybe do it a couple times, but on the fifth time, they're like bye, Miss Brown, and thank you, and doing it all on their own because I've just modeled it for them.
Right. So great,
that's amazing. So let's say that you have a little girl come to you with Down syndrome, who's 10. And not writing yet, and it's all scribble. What do we do? This may be my daughter. Or
help
not.
Me.
Okay. So.
And have you had cases like this, or is this?
Yes, Maya, that I was saying early. Okay. She was exactly 10, and she had been exposed to everything in school. She'd been exposed to everything, and she wasn't writing yet. But all the information was in there. Mm-hmm. It was just unlocking it and letting it get out. Mm-hmm. So. What I would do with her was she'd have a notebook. I would start with drawing. Okay, Miss Brown's going to draw a circle. Now you draw a circle. So letting her feel successful at just simple shapes. Simple, a balloon. Go stop. And then I can't even tell you how many times, Heather, I've seen this happen. Mom will say, like, no, child does no writing. And then I start with a high interest word, mom, because I just want to see what they do. So I'll write mom, M-O-M, and then I put boxes underneath it. Yeah. So they've got the little space. And then I'll go, okay, you write mom. I just want to see what they'll do. And usually I'll get like, I'm nervous. I'm like, that's okay. Whatever you do is fine. And if a child won't do anything, then I'll make a mark. I'll just go, mark, mark, mark. See, look, mom. So then they know it's okay just to go mark, 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 just to have a symbol there for that. And then I know that we're going to work from there. But I've had so many children that all of a sudden just write M-O-M. It just comes out because they've been exposed to that. Then I'm like, okay. And then later on in that session, they'll pull out since they felt successful, on the back of a worksheet, they'll just start writing mom, 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 because they feel special. They feel successful at that. Oh, yeah. So I think tossing out the standard of like, the complicated worksheets with pencils and erasers and all that. There's no pencils at Miss Brown's house. There's no erasers. Because eraser, it's like, wait, you did it wrong. You have to erase.
There's a wrong or right.
Right. And they also will tend to perseverate on that. And yeah. So I have to probably, without knowing your daughter, probably there's a shit, like she might be a little nervous about that. She mm-hmm. might be like, oh, I want to get it right. Or, right. you know, who knows?
Which, Heather, you said before, like she'll know when something's too hard. So then she just won't do it. Right.
Right. No, I'm over here crying because you're
silent because you're like, this is Macy.
No, I can't even talk. I feel like I wish I had this. I can't talk and cry.
Yeah.
Because my 10-year-old is just always feeling defeated.
Mm.
And I just didn't know, right? To set her up only for success. And then it feels too late.
No,
it's not.
Yeah, it's not.
My cry voice, sorry. Normally I would stop. I need my spray.
Focus spray.
It feels, I know it's not too late, but it also feels like, oh man, I failed her, you know, mm-hmm. which I know also is not true, but it feels that way because, and it wasn't even a big deal. It was just the little things you do as parents where it's like, what's this? Like the testing, yeah. like from yes. a young age or the,
correcting.
Yeah. The correcting or yeah. like if she didn't get something right, the hounding until
right.
she did.
Right.
And it just wasn't setting her up to not fail.
But and you didn't know.
I didn't
but
know.
Didn't know any other way.
I didn't know. And now it's like, that's the biggest thing with her is she just, the second something's hard for her, she's done. She mm-hmm. shuts down. She's out. She won't even
right.
attempt. And so then it's, everything feels like a battle.
Yeah.
And I just wish I knew. I wish I had you when she was littler, but I have you now.
Yes. And 10 is not, 10 is, 10's
she's
like,
little.
10's a great age. That it is,
And that's an interesting point, Heather, because you were an educator. You were a teacher.
I was a special educator.
A special educator. So I wonder, too, which is an interesting topic in itself.
I have so many special educators, teachers in my group that I teach and that work, and it's the hardest for them just because of your education.
Oh, my gosh. I would be, if I was a teacher today, I would be a completely different educator. Yes.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I just didn't know. Right. And I worked with high schoolers. I worked with young adults and high schoolers.
Which are some of my favorite videos in Mrs. Brown's learning program online is when she does group sessions. You do group sessions. And they're the best. So dance parties and creative writing, what they come up with.
Yeah. And they just are the best. I have to share because this just came to mind with my older one. John, I just posted this on my Facebook yesterday. John just turned 21. And I know his birthday is August 20th because he's been telling me for the past 5 years, I'm going to be 21. And but he was there yesterday. I'm like, oh, I have to just get a picture with him. And he's 21. He started at 4. And and then I always, to make writing fun, it has to be notes back and forth. What's interesting to her? So all my kids, and plus it makes me feel good, write about Miss Brown.
Yeah.
You're like, tell me what you think.
I love it. And as long as they don't say you're fat.
I'm worried about my mom notes because all the examples you've given are a little bit sassy and mischievous, which I feel like comes with that extra chromosome.
And you know, for moms, you know, we have our little special relationship. I'm gonna say the nicest things to you in a letter, and then I'm modeling for them. And so that's why I get such nice letters from them, because I've been modeling that for them. So by doing letters back, just in her mind, well, let me just finish the John thing. So John writes me a note and it says, "Dear Miss Brown, you're wonderful to me. I like you just the way you are. You're so nice," or something like that. But I love how I have a Mr. Rogers vibe going with him because he always says that, "I like you just the way you are."
Oh, bud.
When you're writing a note, are you only writing words you know they can read, or you're writing it and then reading it to them?
I'm writing it and reading it to them. So that way you're getting the reading in there too.
Gotcha.
And what I have my beginner readers do is they circle everything. So you'd write her note and just say, "Why don't you go to your seat and read it and circle it? You know, dear, I love you. You're the best. Love, Mom." Mm-hmm. And then you're sort of modeling. Then on the back of that, you'd say, "Okay, look, you want to write the word Mom?" So you just, I think, if you can sort of get out of I think the moms I work with, and I know you guys feel this way, like if I don't do this, I'm failing my child and she's never going to learn how to do this. So you're sort of like it's on a treadmill. But if you can sit back, like what we do at Miss Brown's house is, it's kind of like playing school. Like if you were in third grade again and you had a little friend, how would you make it fun? Right. You know, and how would you be silly? And how would you just go, you're not going to, you know, be correcting every mistake when you're playing school with your friends. Although you might, if we're bossy like me.
Yeah. Wrong. You're excited when someone gets it wrong so you can correct it.
Yeah, so that's not a good example. But no, it's possible. And I think it's just going back to, let's say, you know, she's 10, but writing-wise, she's really 3. Right. So let's go back and get that developmental step, you know? And then tell everybody at school. Like, you can't... I found it's hard to teach this to teachers and educators who aren't like really excited about it and be like, wow, I want to do this too, because it's a shift in how you think. But if you share with them what they're doing and say, you know, it's okay, it doesn't have to be perfect, or maybe she can work on her writing stuff at a certain time during the day or whatever, and it's okay that it's wrong, you know, wrong in quotation marks, you know.
Right.
So,
with writing, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I think people appreciate this question maybe. Mm-hmm. How much of it is actual fine motor? Like the ability, finger strength, and little fine motor things.
Okay, so this goes under the category of you're just going to get the truth from me.
Yes, I love the truth.
I tell all my new moms now, don't even expect political correctness from me now, because it saves time.
It's like, no one has time for that.
No one's got time for it. Like, let me just beat around the bush.
Right.
From what I found... And from what I found, I do not zero in on that. Mm-hmm. And I see some of my children, like you'll see the picture of John holding writing his name John at 4, his grip was like tight. It was a good grip. That just sort of came natural for him. So I think the things that you do that build muscle strength work, but I don't make a big deal. When I used to be like, oh, if a child's not holding the marker correctly or we're not using a certain utensil, then they're not going to be, they're going to learn the wrong way and they're going to be messed up forever and never get it. What I found is just to let all that go out the window. I try to direct them with them, you know, I try to direct them like, let's hold your marker like this. And then they get it. And then as they write more, I don't even notice that this child has fine motor issues.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
So sometimes I think there's a lot of things that get thrown. Like somebody was just asking me in my group, they said, do children with Down syndrome have, if their strength is reading, they're going to be a bad writer? You know, that's what these therapists are telling me. And I'm like, no. Mm. Is it because I'm a good teacher, I'm going to be bad at something else or whatever? It's just like, no. I think we have a tendency to just like look for information and maybe pigeonhole people with Down syndrome a little bit. I always remember what special educators would say things like, oh, well, this child has plateaued. And they're still saying that now. They're saying, well, you know, they plateaued because I heard children with Down syndrome plateau. And this comes from educators and things like that.
I've heard this.
And it's
peaks
not,
and valleys you just, or whatever.
You never, ever plateau. And that's probably why kids come to Ms. Brown's house forever.
Yeah. Mm.
Because there's always something to learn, you know?
Definitely.
My oldest is 38, I think.
Wow.
And
I need his number.
I know.
I'm always searching for a friend who has Down syndrome, who's my peer, because I don't have one.
Oh, so I'll hook you up. He would love that. He's awesome. He's Daily Scriptures by Jeff. That's okay. That's him. You guys would hit it off.
I'm gonna find him right now.
He's that's
really
awesome.
Great.
I lost my thought.
There was something that we were talking about writing, the big unknown. Did we kind of cover that?
We covered it. I think people just say writing's hard, don't even worry about it, go to a keyboard, go to something else, and that's not true.
Right.
Because the missing piece, they miss that developmental step where they just get to scribble. And how you might have taught your other children, if you watch the process of a sibling, how they learn to write, it's going to be fast, fast, fast.
Uh-huh.
But you just take that and you just make it slower and just know that what took the sibling 1 year to do is probably going to take 5 years for your child with Down syndrome. Maybe it may or may not, but it's 5 years,
get
you're going to...
mindset right.
Yeah, 5 years,
okay.
You're going to be... You know, John...
That's what I need to hear.
John, who does all the writing that I was telling you guys about, he is a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant writer. And I'm going to tell you this just to give you guys hope. He was homeschooled. I remember his mom coming to me saying... And he was doing this in his notebook. It was, I see a bird, I see a dog, I see a cat for years. That's all he wrote. And she's like, yeah, are we going to move on past this? And I'm like, just go with it, Mom. And now he writes brilliantly. So it's just being okay with like if your daughter, whatever she wants to decide to write on, that's what she's going to, you're going to see what her niche is. She might, what's one of her favorite things?
Oh, dance.
Dance.
Forever.
Okay. So then you just start with the word dance.
Yeah.
And then one day you see that she's just made a D and a C and an E. And you're like, whoa, you just wrote the word dance. And then underneath you model it. And so instead of her feeling like, that's not really how you spell dance, but, you know, then she's going to, and then it just builds from there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Terry Brown.
So encouraging. I just feel really excited. I feel like that's so, what you were just saying about how the boy who wrote the same thing over and over for a long time, and what educators probably would have said, he plateaued. And that if we can just change our mindset and like embrace that this is a slow process and it's like, it's going to come together more
some point. I'm so glad you got that, because with Mara, I didn't tell this part of the story. Like Mara wanted to write about her classmate, Alex. And it's the first time I said, Mara, go to your seat and just write Alex on the back. Go ahead, write Alex. She was used to me either writing it out for her to trace or me to write it for her to copy. And she just sat there. She's like, no. I said, Mara, you can do it. Just write anything. Write anything. Just do it. And then she came back with an A and an X.
Yeah.
And I said, awesome. Oh, you just wrote Alex. And then I just real excited. Then she got it. And then no kidding. It was 7 months, 8 months of on the back of the worksheet, Alex cute, Alex is cute. It went from AX to her writing it out. And she does not mind me saying this. Mara's mom, one of the biggest type A moms I've ever met. And she's thinking like, what are you doing, Terry? Yes. 7 months of what? Do you even know what you're doing?
Yes.
And she's even tells me now, she's like, when you told me you were going to teach Mara to write, I thought you were crazy. I didn't think that could happen. But again, it's going with the flow and just sort of tapping into your intuition going, this feels right and it's going somewhere. And I told her, I said, I don't, Mara's my guinea pig. I don't know if she's going to get it. I really don't know. Let's just see what happens. But it worked for her. And then time after time, student after student after student, they're all writing. And then the first story that I told you about Jared shows you that even when you just think, no, this isn't going to happen, mm-hmm. it can still happen.
That just kind of led me into saying or talking about probably the work that we do at home with our kiddos and our students with Down syndrome is really important because the writing things that you've mentioned were all personal, maybe not writing skills that they would actually do at school because mm-hmm. what they were writing at Mrs. Brown's house means something to them. It's right. something that's at the forefront of their mind. Where I could see, I wonder how that would play out in school when they're like, write down the sentence. But if there's no connection, you know, mm-hmm. That's huge. So I feel like what we do with our kids at home are really important. We can't count on just school.
No, you can't. And then you help school to say like, okay, well, how do we adapt this? Like if they're writing a paper on George Washington, instead of the whole page being, you're just your learner tracing some highlighter that they've written. Your instructional assistant would write out, George Washington was the first president. Okay, Sunny, what would be one word here that you would like to write of all this? So she's getting the information and then you write out president.
Right.
And all caps. And then you put a box underneath it. Then she's done it. So she's had her writing for the day. She's got a reading and she hasn't just gone crazy because she just has to trace this all these yellow lines that absolutely make no sense to her.
Right, right.
So there's ways to adapt it.
Totally.
And some of that is going to be on us as parents mm-hmm. to know this kind of thing, know how to adjust it for our child, know how to even communicate that to the teachers.
And then communicate mm-hmm. to teacher. And my experience is teachers love it when parents communicate because they're like, okay, I think a lot of teachers think we're nervous because we think you're looking at us going, why aren't you getting this done?
Right.
And so, oh, wow, this is working, so let's do this. And right. this takes a little bit of burden off of them. Like Sunny's teacher was so excited, and she's like, well, this is great. You know,
yeah.
give me some more ideas, like how can I adapt it? And she say, okay, this is what I'm doing in class. And I said, that's perfect. Just don't have her do 50 S's. Just have her do two big S's,
right.
you know. Or don't have her trace her whole name. Just break it down, mm-hmm. and then each day just change it up a little bit.
One of our previous speakers right before you, Kristen, talked about taking photos of homework video. And I could see how if at home we're allowing space for expressive writing, it'd be great to take pictures of that writing as also some information to show like an English teacher in the future right. or any kind of writing professional of the educational world that like maybe they're not doing this in homework in class, but they're doing this in their journal at home.
Yeah.
I
right.
just think that's
right.
shows capability.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. All the reading that Mason does, we did a reading program through Club 21. I mention them almost every episode because we've done so much with them, but it's nothing. All of the reading that Mason knows for the most part, she's just learned at home. Like we've had to be the ones
right.
to do the reading. And then we've had teachers who have been really great in letting us and saying, hey, can her homework be these things that we are giving to you that you can say, this is your homework. So then at home she's doing that and she thinks it comes from the teacher. But I don't know that she would be the reader she is if we left it up to the school.
Right.
Right. Which I'm sure is what you right. find with your students.
Right. And when I give talks, I wrote down this note too. Years ago when I started working, I was so kind of blown away at the success I was having and the things that was happening. And people would ask me to give seminars, to talk, to start programs with Down Syndrome associations. And I'm like, that was so out of my comfort zone. And I'm talking at the Dear Mom conference. I mean, I've really come a long way. That was, this is not my cup of tea. But I've always thought what goes on at Miss Brown's house is too great not to share. I mean, I really have a responsibility to share this. So when I will give a talk and I'll tell moms in the audience, it's like, there's a way your child can read and write, but I'm only going to start a program that puts the ball in the court of people who are, I'm going to teach the parents how to do it.
Right.
So that's what it's always been my goal to, when I start these programs, it's like, okay, the parent is the primary teacher. Mm-hmm. And I know it's hard because not all parents are born teachers, you know?
Right.
But where there's a will, there's a way. And I kind of adapt for that too. Like, I know some moms don't have it in them, but really if you can't leave it up to the school to mm-hmm. teach them, unless you have a great teacher who is doing all the research on her own. And plus school's busy. I mean, they're busy. Overloaded.
Yeah.
They're overloaded.
They are. And we got to come alongside them.
Right.
Not have expectations that they're going to cover it all.
Right.
I feel like it's a team. Just as, yep. even then, for other
And hopefully, this will probably be a good time for me to mention the online program that I've done.
Please.
So that's I guess about 10 years ago, I used to put my videos on YouTube, like Sunny read for the first time, she read her book, so I could send it to the mom, and then the mom could send it to the grandparents and everybody. So my YouTube channel just started growing and growing and growing, and people would find me on YouTube, and then they would write me and go, can you teach me how to do what you do? I want to do that. And I thought, well, I'll try. So I had a really fly by the seat of my pants online program. I was just trying my best to help people. But again, it goes back to what happens, what goes on at Miss Brown's house is too good not to share.
Yeah.
So it's really, now we have close to 300 members in the group. Mm-hmm. It's really, really doing well. I teach in there all the time. I'm answering questions, showing videos to explain things, and I'm really happy with how far that it's come. So I didn't think I could pull it off. I didn't think it was possible, and it caused me a lot of stress for like the past 5 years. It's like, what have I gotten myself into? And I mean, I have a hard enough time with the moms that come to my house that see me every...
Moms are crazy too, so I understand.
Moms I see every single week, and I'm explaining, and they're not getting it. It's like, how can I explain this program to somebody that I've never met, who hasn't seen me in action? I'm like, I just don't know how it could. I think this program is so multifaceted that what I'm seeing is people are picking up from it what they need. They're mm-hmm. learning from me, sort of a master teacher, like, okay, here's what you do. When you have a problem, I can answer, and I try to keep everything program related, so we're not like all over the place, like mm-hmm. what's the best this, that, and the other, just program related. And
right.
So I'm excited about that. That's been my new baby, my new project for the last couple years. And so
what cool. a gift to everybody around the world. That's really neat.
Oh, people all over the world, Nigeria.
You're really a Singapore. Pioneer in this space, and it's huge. And I'm so thankful that you say yes to getting it out there, because it is too good what's going on at Mrs. Brown's house. It's too good not to share. And I feel like, I don't know everybody in the world, but I feel like nobody's doing what you're doing. And I just think you're a hero in our Down syndrome space. You're definitely a hero.
Thank you.
Yes.
And I love that we do all have access. So tell us exactly how people can find you. Our listeners can find you. Or we can leave notes if that.
Yes.
We'll do both though.
Okay. Too. I'm www.sohappytolearn.com. We just redid our website. So it's easier. It's more easier to follow. And there's a subscription to download all the materials I have. Like everything I share, you can download and print the books out. And then a separate fee for the Facebook group. Mm-hmm. Because I found that's the only – Facebook is very easy to have this type of group, because I can download a 10-minute video right onto Facebook, where that's can't really do these things on a website. Right. And everybody's always on Facebook anyway, so just pop over to the teaching group. Mm-hmm. So and then a lot of supportive moms. So and I'm also on Instagram at Mrs. Brown's house. Mm-hmm. So happy to learn at Mrs. Brown's house. Yeah.
And we'll share those links on our show notes.
Mm-hmm. We will.
Well, this Mrs. Been, Terry Brown, thank you for being here with us.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
We've learned a lot. I'm going home and signing so up.
Inspired.
Sign me so up inspired. For that group.
Yes.
We are so pumped. Love Every is sponsoring the show this month. Their products are gorgeous, as are their models, because I have to brag here, Ace is one of them.
He's so cute.
Thank you.
I received a Love Every play tent, and it is so beautifully made. Their wood, sleek, simple design, I think best fits your child's development at the age as a baby. And as aesthetically pleasing as it looks, you want to keep it up in your house. You know, as a mom, you're like, it doesn't go with the plastic ones, the bright colors, doesn't go. The play tent is beautifully handcrafted and goes with your style, guaranteed.
I love that. And they have these things that are called play kits that are curated basically for your child's age from birth up until a year. And the one that the box that we have is for 11 to 12 month old. And the toys are amazing. They're all matched developmentally to where your child is at. And you can receive these in the mail basically every month. So such a great gift to give also to your friends.
Yeah. And here's why I love them the most. They are actually serious about every baby. And that's why they have kids with different abilities in their marketing images, like my Ace face. Because they really do believe that all of our kids matter. And they want to work with parents who are walking into a new diagnosis and get these toys right. So you can let them know your concerns and they'll work with you to make sure the kids are on track. Let them know you're a Lucky Few listener and you'll get 10% off your subscription to the play kits or $10 off a tent. Just use the code THELUCKYFEW at checkout and find out why they're being praised from the pages of Pop Sugar to People Magazine to Real Simple.
She is a delight. I learned so much today. But before we close it up here, we are going to head into what we often refer to as our favorite part of the podcast, and that is good news. Take it away, Micah.
Good news. I like to have good news. La 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 lee.
Okay. That was a good one. That was a good
Thanks.
One.
Thanks.
You're welcome. All right. This good news I love so much. This is from Lacey. Lacey sent this to us through an Instagram message, and she said that her daughter joined the school orchestra.
Oh, which love that. Is
really, really good news. Lacey, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Oh, all right, Mercedes. Really cool. What do you got, Merce?
I have Chelsea here, and she says, my three-month-old is rolling over and starting to lift his head up during tummy time.
Aww. That's awesome.
And that's so special and exciting. Way to be you, boy, and do awesome.
Oh, that next
drink. I miss those days.
I know.
Tummy time.
I know. The little heads. Oh, so cute.
I know. Okay, so I have one from Allison. She said that Asher has been home 3 months from Ukraine, and he has already started to speak.
Wow.
And his words are starting to come along, she says, and the best thing is he is so proud of himself. So she says, thanks for all you do, and she also says, Asher is two, by the way. So there you go. Right. Two-year-old. That's really awesome.
That's so awesome.
That's so awesome.
Asher, congratulations, buddy, and welcome home.
Mm-hmm.
And welcome home. Thank you again to Mrs. Terry Brown for, sorry that again. Okay. Welcome home. And welcome home, Asher. Thank you, friends, for sending in that good news. You can send in your good news by going to theluckyfewpodcast.com, and you can find our phone number there that you can call in and leave a voice message or a text message or send us an email with that. We love to read that on our show. Thank you again, Mrs. Terry Brown, for joining us today. And you can find everything you're going to need to know about So Happy to Learn with Mrs. Terry Brown in the show notes on our website. And thank you to Andy Lara for being our editor in charge amazingness for making this whole show happen.
Editor of amazingness. Seriously. Making it happen every week.
Every week. Andy Lara is the best. Remember, if you love the Lucky Few podcast, share it with a friend, subscribe, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. All right, friends, it is time to go read and write and do math with your kids in such a happy way. Thanks. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
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 Thanks for listening to the Lucky Few podcast. Review our show on iTunes and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on all social media at The Lucky Few Pod. Subscribe on our website for ongoing updates at theluckyfewpodcast.com. Tell us about your good news by leaving us a voicemail or text at 424-442-9147. Our show is edited and produced by Andy Lara at andylikeswords.com. See you next time.